Fair warning, the following contains disturbing sexual imagery and criminality. The names and identifying information of the perpetrator of these crimes and of victims have been changed to protect all concerned. Everyone listening should proceed with a thoughtful consideration of utmost caution. These are real crimes committed by real people. Human sexuality fills the space between pleasure and desperation, reflecting the limits of our flawed understanding of the most intimate part of who we are. Around us, cinematic fantasies of violence and larceny, of terrorism and despair, are presented as entertainment. And then, as we approach sexual criminality, all fantasies become guilty until proven otherwise. We come to a place where ignorance is the last stop as sex becomes crime. You have now entered Sex Crime Central. His name, Tommy Valencia. His occupation, a 5-year veteran of a fast food franchise, still working at the entry level. The time, stuck in slow motion in a fast food world, Tommy Valencia's life is a frozen instant of sameness. We are joining him on an evening at home, between the unchanging calendar's days of a world that never seems to change for the better. Before Mr. Valencia goes on to his next shift, he takes an unexpected order for an item that is decidedly not on the menu, an item available only at the drive-thru of Sex Crime Central. At present, the boredom was killing Tommy Valencia. Only 22 years old, he felt as though he'd accumulated a century of, is that all there is? He'd never felt significant. Well, he'd never felt that feeling anywhere or any time. Certainly not as a student at school. He'd been able to graduate, but just barely. Even his diploma reflected the many accommodations the school district had allowed him in order to move him along. He had no friends who valued him. Maybe a career, you're thinking? You've got to be kidding, he thought. Exhausted from another monotonous day of again asking an endless stream of people if they'd like to supersize something, if they'd like to supersize anything so he could make more money for his employer, Tommy was profoundly unhappy, unhappy, alienated, and decidedly lonely. He didn't know the words to describe his discontent. In fact, he knew no words to describe any of his feelings. He'd never had a conversation with anyone in his entire life about his feelings, nor had he been able to understand anyone else when they talked about their own feelings. But not knowing how to express his unhappiness didn't mean it didn't exist. His unhappiness certainly did exist, and it weighed on him. Fortunately, for a man who had no hope of his life changing, Tommy Valencia had two items on his menu of self-soothing behaviors. The first was food, and his father, an amazing chef, always had something delicious to eat in their kitchen that was stock full of Filipino cuisine. The second item was not on the kids' menu, and the only restaurants that served it were situated in a place not known to anyone else in his world, a place known as Sex Crime Central. As Tommy Valencia got comfortable with his bowl of fresh lumpia egg rolls in his bedroom, he turned to his laptop, already fired up and online. The sites he'd been going to in recent years had been so much more forgiving, so much less judgmental than, well, outside his family, literally all of the people he'd ever known. His troubles had started in elementary school once he'd been labeled as that weird guy. He didn't understand things the way the other kids did. He said things that made people look at him funny. He missed all the details that other kids learned to observe as social cues that would guide their responses in social situations day after day. After the first few months at school, the kids around him learned to cope with his social awkwardness by making fun of him. The abuse of his young peers started with mockery and sometimes degenerated into bullying. Teachers would sometimes try to protect him, but the attacks seemed so unrelenting and so repetitious that, after all, they had other duties, like teaching, for example. Mocked, bullied, and eventually ostracized, Tommy tried to cope. For years, he attempted to pretend to be like the other kids. Okay, he attempted to pretend to be normal. He'd smile when they smiled. He'd nod his head affirmatively and say he understood when really he didn't understand his schoolmates or his teachers very well. In the end, he gave up most of his attempts to pretend normal. They were futile anyway, and most kids saw through his fakery. Tommy took to wearing headphones to shut out the noise of the mean people around him. And for a time, that did seem to help him. He no longer felt like throwing what other people called a tantrum. He was just overwhelmed with all of the noise, and he simply couldn't handle it anymore. The headphones became a regular feature of his life. By the time he was out of middle school, Tommy was already making suicidal gestures as a way of trying to say what he had no words to say. He was angry, sad, lonely, and confused, and had absolutely no way to express any of these feelings. And frankly, no one in his life who either cared or, as with his family, if they did care, no one knew what to do about it. He was just the way he was. He had a way of thinking that made the virtue of acceptance into the vice of low expectations. Knives, scissors, and even pencils all contributed to the numerous permanent scars on his two arms. It didn't help Tommy at all that, since puberty, he'd begun to have new feelings he'd never had before, feelings that even he thought were weird. He began eventually, like most adolescents, to masturbate, but no one talked to him about that being normal. So he assumed this new behavior that made him feel so good was also a part of what made him so very weird. His academic problems seemed overwhelming. He had difficulty paying attention as his teachers seemed to drone on and on. He couldn't focus for long, and his inability to maintain attention and to complete his work frustrated his teachers time and again. As the first years of his adolescent sexual awakening progressed, Tommy Valencia's fantasies became both more detailed and, for him, more confusing. He liked girls. Sometimes. But sometimes he liked boys. Sometimes he thought he might be bisexual, but as he moved into his later years, he came to prefer the label pansexual. It felt more truly him because, after all, he didn't care about biological sex, and he was just as indifferent to gender or gender identity. His need for love, so profound that it was felt as a physical hunger, kept forever unmet, opened him up to any solution he could conceive of. He reasoned, if there was a chance to not be lonely, what difference would genitalia make? Tommy Valencia knew he'd never be loved, or ever even have a sexual partner in his life. This made it easy for him to look on his evenings with porn as his own personal version of going on a date. And as time passed, his interests and his standards seemed to change. He didn't understand why the pictures of adults were no longer so interesting as they had once been, but that was okay. There were lots of other pictures to choose from. And he came to find his interest picking up as the photos he chose began to fall more and more into the zone of the forbidden. Didn't matter to Tommy. He'd been alone and on his own for so long, he knew that he was the only person he had to please. That night, he enjoyed the pornographic pictures of the underage children for the last time. Early the next morning, there was a knock at the door, and Tommy's parents invited the uniformed officers in when they asked for him. They were there to deliver an invitation to a very different party, Tommy's first invitation ever. They were there to escort him to a party known as Sex Crime Central. Sex Crime Central's debriefing isn't for everyone. If you like your true crime the way some people do, you know that it's really more like crime porn, isn't it? You know that true crime is full of the titillating details of how the perp tricked his latest victim into the car that was her one-way ticket to becoming a statistic. The thrills and chills that help all of us get a bit of a flutter. And perhaps there's a lesson or two about not getting into cars with men who have names like Green River Killer or Son of Sam. But here at Sex Crime Central, I invite you to join me in sussing out the story of how perpetrators become so impaired in their decision-making that they could possibly make the decision to commit their crime. Part of developing curiosity about their process comes from the knowledge that little boys don't ever dream of growing up to become sex offenders. But little boys do grow up and lose their way. And these little boys can grow up to become sex offenders. Most people have such a strong distaste for these offenders that they can't bring themselves to look closely at what happened. And then there's you. Oh yeah, and the people like you who are unsatisfied with medieval theories of evil or knee-jerk reactions like, well, he must be a sexual deviant, right? Regular listeners of this podcast have already figured out that these are not really helpful or even scientific approaches to understanding sexual criminality. Such theories offer us no means of predicting sexual criminality and no means of ever figuring out how to prevent it. If we truly understand the stories of the visitors to Sex Crime Central, we will then remember that they are human beings and, here's the scary part, that there, in their humanity, but for the grace of God, go I. Really, it is so much more comforting to consider sex offenders as monsters. Comforting and futile. As always, please know as we debrief this case that we're not looking to excuse anyone's behavior. Veteran listeners know that understanding how a behavior came about is decidedly not the same as excusing that behavior. So how did Tommy Valencia, a man who'd never had a single sexual relationship in his entire life, end up catching a felony charge on a sex crime? After all, he had no diagnosable sexual deviancy. He had no history of criminal behavior. In fact, his history included his kind and supportive immigrant family. He, like most of those convicted of sex crimes, was born a perfectly normal baby boy. At least, he was born perfectly normal by modern, enlightened standards. You might think I'm hedging a bit here, and you'd be right. One of our modern ideas that I think really makes sense is that of treating neurodiversity with the respect and appreciation it deserves. Neurodiversity simply refers to the many unique configurations of the normal range of the human brain. Many of these configurations could be better thought of as normal variations of normal brains. Mr. Valencia satisfies the diagnostic criteria for two conditions that are referred to as mental disorders in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, known as the DSM, the Bible of the mental health industry. Tommy Valencia is autistic. This means, among other things, that he misses social cues and has difficulty reading the expressions on faces. He has a history of doing what uninformed people believe are temper tantrums. This behavior follows sensory overload, and he tries to cope by wearing headphones to block out the overstimulating noise around him. Understanding autism as merely neuroatypical rather than a mental illness is helpful to all of us because the autistic often bring intellectual gifts to humanity that the rest of us could never hope to replicate. Unfortunately for Tommy, He was not given a diagnosis, and instead, his needs for human companionship and connection largely went ignored. Well, ignored would have been a kindness compared to the relentless teasing, verbal abuse, and bullying he endured, typical of most children raised in communities that do not understand their autism. That Tommy Valencia was autistic was a noteworthy characteristic of his intellectual presentation of self. The real problem was his community's reaction to and treatment of his very normal humanity. Of all the predators on Earth, humans are clearly the most dangerous. Among human beings, men are the most dangerous subpopulation. But really, there's a specific subgroup of men who are even more dangerous. That group is made up of the inadequately socialized adolescent male. This is true for so many reasons. One of these is certainly that their own neurological development is not yet complete. They are emotionally and morally undeveloped when compared to their future adult selves. To ensure that this social development remains inadequate, all we need do is nothing. In order to make a difference, teenage boys must be guided, nurtured, and mentored. Unless we don't really want the best possible outcomes. Because whatever the outcome is, it will affect both them and the rest of the community around them. In a very similar way to that of the unrecognized and untreated autism's impact on Tommy's life, his attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, abbreviated ADHD, all in caps, was also unrecognized and untreated. In my decades-long experience with those convicted of sex crimes, about 30 to 35% of them have ADHD. Virtually all of them were undiagnosed, and none of them were properly treated. And I don't mean by this that ADHD is by any means a cause of sexual criminality. Yet when left untreated, there is a role it plays in future sexual criminality, and here's how. Boys with ADHD often fail to complete the work assigned them, whether chores at home or homework at school. They are perceived as procrastinators and as defiant, often by those in authority around them. They are frequently impulsive and do things that break rules without their really thinking through the consequences of their actions. They do all this because of the way their brains function, which is really different from people like me, who can do all of the same things, the same sort of procrastination, the same sort of breaking of rules. But in my case, it would be with a motive of disrespect or laziness or self-gain. People with ADHD are typically the kindest people you've ever met who would never want to harm another human being, but they get labeled as lazy, crazy, or stupid by parents and teachers who use their own moral diagnoses to explain the behavior of the child. This mislabel creates enormous difficulties for the child with ADHD, who begins hating school, thinking that he's bad, and who ultimately loses all trust in authorities. To try to cope with this emotional pain, boys with ADHD often turn to smoking and drug abuse. Tobacco, in the end, seems helpful because, like the medications prescribed for ADHD, tobacco contains a stimulant that helps them remain calm and to focus. Many of their other drug choices are based on the reduction of anxiety. Their anxiety is not, decidedly not, a part of ADHD. Their anxiety is the result of the chronic criticism and abuse they receive, which often makes kids with ADHD hypervigilant because they know they'll be accused of and attacked for doing something wrong at any minute. They develop a chronic sense of impending doom. Street drugs often help with this feeling, at least temporarily. What didn't happen in Tommy Valencia's life is that his autism prevented him from learning the sort of social skills that would have allowed him to have both platonic and romantic love in his future. Think of it. to never develop the skills that would have prepared you to honorably and legally get your adult needs for love and connection met. Imagine how that's supposed to work out for an individual who's a member of a social species that includes humanness, right along with the words social and love. These deficiencies in his youth set Tommy up for a series of emotional dominoes that fell in a catastrophic sequence of failure. Because no one taught him how to pick up on social cues, he never did develop friends. That's a big domino. Because he had no friends, he never learned the basics of socializing or the most basic ways, the non-sexual ways, to solve the problem of loneliness. Another domino. Because his ADHD prevented him from a sense of success in school, he grew up feeling too depressed and too anxious to take social or academic risks. Another domino falls. Because he was always lonely and chronically failing, he arrived at adolescence with a male sex drive and no coherent strategy of how to manage it intelligently. A third and fourth domino. Because Tommy became an adult male with an adult male sex drive, but no clue how to plant himself in good relationships, he depended on internet porn to take care of his most superficial sexual needs during masturbation. Masturbation is quite normal. Depending on masturbation for a lifetime is not. Why not? Because we never develop the sort of connections that put an end to our emotional loneliness. So in this cascade of falling dominoes, there was, at the end, one last one. He became systematically desensitized to pornography to the point that he had to search for ever more exotic material to stimulate his masturbatory fantasies. What could our community have done to prevent this sex crime? Sometimes people get scared about actually understanding offenders like Tommy, and they say, "My autistic brother never had any of that kind of instruction, and he never committed a sex crime." This is a false equivalency. We are all different. Not everyone who's raised in, for example, an alcoholic family is affected in the same way as another kid. We all have a myriad of other influences, including wonderful mentors, or terrible ones, high IQs, or ones not so high, and some of us have athletic abilities that serve to help build a bridge to success. But none of us who are parents believe that placing a child in an alcoholic family, for example, is a positive move in the development of that child. We need to be aware of those little boys who are growing up without friends and to teach them the sort of social skills that ultimately evolve into intimacy skills, including boys like Tommy Valencia, boys who never seemed able to learn these skills without special help. And that part is on the rest of us, in that we did nothing to help him. Parents, schools, and religions could all be part of this solution. We don't have to teach more about sex itself or about sexual intercourse. What we do have to do is teach one another what it means to be a human being, including a sexual being, and how to manage our adult sexual drive. What could Tommy Valencia have done to protect himself from committing his crime? Quick answer, not much. If our society doesn't see a problem, then no one will take steps to bring about healthy change. It's the same with teaching basic social skills and how to manage sexuality intelligently. If no one around Tommy understood these concepts, how was he, an autistic boy, ever to begin doing so? The Virgin Sex Offender, case closed. While in his family's home, or at work preparing and serving food, Tommy Valencia never stood out. He had learned long ago how to blend easily into the background of all social situations. In fact, over time, he'd become invisible. No one noticed him. He didn't love his work. It had no meaning for him whatsoever. He didn't love his friends, as he didn't have any. He really didn't know love at all, but he was certainly human enough to hunger for a meaningful human connection. A connection that he still doesn't have. A connection that may never be his until he learns the intimacy skills and the social skills that so far he's never had any help with. After making his connection at Sex Crime Central, Tommy Valencia wasn't particularly moved in a thoughtful direction, as he'd long ago accepted with a deep faith that his life was so flawed that he was hopeless. He would likely never see anything better evolve. His crime saddened him, as it represented further evidence of just how flawed a human being he was. His risk of suicide increased. He continues to make the burgers and the French fries that we ask of him, but Tommy Valencia has little reason to believe that anyone will give him a lift up and out of Sex Crime Central. His future remains bleak.
You're listening to Sex Crime Central with psychotherapist Stephen Ng. This has been an Ng Intellectual production with editing by Steve Cooper and original score by Octophonics. Follow Stephen on Twitter at StephenNgMFT or visit StephenNg.com for more information. Don't forget to subscribe to Sex Crime Central and leave us a review with your thoughts on each episode. We'd love to hear from you.